Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
What's shaking, bacon?
All right, then. I think we're going to get into some games today.
Yeah, we're going to start off with a little listener mail. And this listener mail, I didn't mean to go all Casey Kasem there. I don't know where that came from. This listener mail comes from Mikey, who says, I'm getting the new PSP Go, and I want to know more about it. Sent from my AT&T iPhone. Mikey sent this, by the way, back in October, which probably means that he's had the PSP Go for a while now. So I apologize, Mikey, but I figure other people want to know about the PSP Go. So we thought we'd talk about the PSP system in general and then work our way to the Go.
Yes, the PlayStation Portable, or PSP, is the newest venture from Sony in the the line itself is newest venture from Sony in the portable gaming market. Now, there have been many portable games over the years, dating yes. back to the 1980s. Yes. Electronic games, I should say.
I was about to say
portable. I was about to say,
baseball's pretty portable. Yeah,
I remember somewhat fondly the days of the Mattel electronic football with the little blinking LED.
Oh, the little
LED
like
lights.
Yes, that red light is my quarterback, and it's throwing this other blinking red light to this other red light, which is my. Who catches the ball from the quarterback? I'm no good with sports.
You could just say receiver.
Receiver.
That would work. Yeah, several different people might catch
them. They were all just blinking lights to me. So, see, that's the problem is that everything I know about football, I learned from those really primitive handheld games.
They don't look anything like that in person.
Yeah, I was very disappointed when I went to my first football game and the music wasn't done in these tiny little blips and bleeps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was – actually, I was quite scared and ended up hiding under the bleachers for most of the game.
Yeah, no 2-bit sounds there.
No, it was – it was overwhelming and frightening, but that's That's talking about the early, early days of portable gaming. And of course, for a really long time, one particular name dominated in portable gaming. Actually, in a way, they're still dominating. But that name would be Nintendo.
Yes. Now, they weren't the very first, though. I mean, there were other people who had tried their hand at you know, making, being the next electronic gaming giant.
But the Nintendo Game Boy managed to catch on with gamers in a way that no other portable gaming system had at that point. And one could argue since, even. There have been a lot of other portable gaming systems that have been out there, some from manufacturers like Atari and
Sega.
Others. Sega. And some of them had stats that and specifications that were very impressive when stacked up against the Nintendo Game Boy. It was just amazing. You'd look at the difference and think, wow, this is almost as dramatic a leap as the NES was over the old Atari 2600. But it turned out that the Game Boy games, the library was so huge and the games were really well designed. Nintendo had a very, very strict policy when it came to allowing games onto the system, that most of these systems, even though they were technically more impressive than the Game Boy, just didn't catch on.
Right.
So when Sony got into the game, it wasn't a sure thing. I mean, it wasn't a done deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, many companies had taken on Nintendo and tried to dethrone them because they had a pretty strong hold on the market from the early 1990s.
Yeah.
And Sony has been the only one who's been able to hold on as long as it has, although it's still, you know, running a distant second, I would say, or at least second place, maybe not distant second. But
right, right.
And I'm sure there are a lot of people that own both.
And again, we're talking about a system that can do a whole lot more than just play games, which when you think about that and you think about how relatively limited the Nintendo system is in comparison, it's amazing still that that Nintendo's system is still dominant in that market. However, Sony has fared better than some of the predecessors. And as Chris was saying, the PSP is still alive and well. And it has its share of very vocal, very passionate fans. It's a good system. I mean, it's really, really an impressive one. If you have never used a handheld gaming system, or if you're only experience was with like an old Game Boy or even a Game Boy Advance, I think you'd be really surprised to see how the PSP performs, because it is essentially as powerful as a PlayStation 2. And you've got in a little portable framework. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it has a better resolution than the Nintendo DS.
Yeah. Which of course is the current flagship on the Nintendo portable gaming front.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a number of other specifications that really have helped it cement its place as an entertainment device, because it's got a 16:9 resolution, which is the widescreen format,
right,
as opposed to the 4:3. And, of course, the first few iterations of the PlayStation Portable offered the opportunity to use UMDs,
Universal Media Discs,
which you can watch. I mean, you can watch movies on it. It's not quite as good as DVD as far as, you know, the resolution, but it is very close. So, yeah. I mean, you can listen to music on it. You can watch movies on it. Of course, the Nintendo machine has caught up in some regards, but you're still not watching, you know, you're still not going to the video store and picking up a movie to watch on your DS.
Well, and
you can listen to music and do some other.
You could also download content from a computer onto a memory stick and transfer that to your PSP, which had the capability of having memory sticks. I want to point out one thing really quickly, just something that tends to bug me.
Sure.
So UMDs.
Yes.
Stands for Universal Media Disc.
Uh huh.
What else do UMDs run on besides the PSP?
That would be nothing.
So what is universal about them?
Well, you can put all kinds of universal content on them.
And that, my friends, is why Chris should be in the PR department for Sony. Because seriously, if you're going to call your media format universal, it darn well better work for more than one device. This is just a personal bone I have to pick with with Sony in general. Sony is known for making proprietary inputs and connectors and cartridges and everything like that. Anything that could theoretically be proprietary.
Like a memory stick?
Like a memory stick, yes.
Or the connectors for the power adapters?
Right. Well, but you know, the one nice thing is that their USB connector for a computer is actually the mini USB.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the one thing that the PSP has that's standardized. Everything else is a proprietary format from Sony. Sony tends to do this a lot with its electronics. I had a Sony camera. Actually, I still have the Sony camera that I was talking about that, I lost the USB cable for that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as soon as I took a look at it, I'm like, oh, well, I've got other USB cables. And I looked at them. Oh, wait, this is a Sony one. And sure enough, it has one of those specific proprietary connectors you have to have in order to plug it into the camera. Gets really, really irritating. However, that's really neither here nor there. I was just wanted to point that out as something that was really bizarre to me to see something called a universal media disk, and yet it only works for one particular device.
Well, on the other hand, you've got Sony's proprietary nature also gives you an advantage in some other departments, because you, with the PSP, you have the ability to take proprietary Sony game franchises like, you know, Gran Turismo and Ratchet and Clank.
Sure.
On the
sure.
go with you.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So it's, you know, you're not going to find those titles available for other gaming systems.
And some other things we should point out that the PSP is able to do. You can use cables to hook your PSP up to a television and actually view content from your PSP mm-hmm. on your television, which mm-hmm. that's kind of interesting. Not everything is going to be full screen. It all depends on the particular application you're running.
Mm-hmm.
There are also, we should mention, there are multiple generations of PSPs out there. They're not all, it's not just one unit that has been on sale since it debuted in, I think, 2004.
Yeah, and it actually started in 2004 in Japan mm-hmm. and made its way to the shores of the United States in spring of 2005.
Okay.
And that would be the very, very first model.
Right. Yeah. And back when it first debuted, just to give you an idea, this is something I think is usually a mistake for a game company.
Okay.
Debuting any kind of game console with only a few titles, I think, is a bad idea. It's always a better idea to have as many titles as you possibly can upon launch or shortly after launch. Otherwise, gamers can lose interest very quickly. And I think when it first launched, there were something like 6 titles in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, by the time it got to the United States, there were many more. There was closer to maybe 30 or whatever, which I think is a much more healthy number.
Yeah. Well, people were saying the same thing about the launch of the Nintendo Wii.
That's true.
When it first came out, because mm-hmm. there were more than that, but, you know, it wasn't exactly overrun with 200 titles when it started. And
I
made people
a little nervous. I think that argument holds water too, because as we see, the one of the main complaints about the Wii is still the lack of compelling games.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's been a problem that's haunted Nintendo for a while, although it's not really hurt Wii sales. There was that one month when PlayStation 3 sales overtook the Wii, but that was a combination of several things. For one, the Wii had been on sale forever, and the PS3 had just had a massive price cut. And then, of course, in November of 2009, Wii sales picked up again mm-hmm. during the holiday season. So yeah. it just took kind of a temporary breather. Getting back to the PSP, we were talking about the different generations. So there's they designate these by numbers. The PSP 1000 is the first generation, correct?
As far as I know, I haven't actually seen it labeled that way.
Yeah.
But the PSP 2000 came out. It was the next version, and it came out in, I believe, 2007.
Right. And this was slightly slimmer and
lighter.
And then you have the PSP 3000, which came out in 2008. That was even slimmer. And also, one of the ways they managed to make it slimmer was, this is what I thought was interesting, they managed to reduce the size of the battery, mm-hmm. which allowed them to make the case slimmer. And it also meant the battery was less powerful. However, they also made the system itself more efficient. So even though the battery didn't have as much of a charge in it as previous batteries,
mm-hmm.
because the system itself was more efficient, you still had about the same amount of battery life as you had before.
Okay. Well, if what I'm reading is correct, I learned that there are, you have options in that regard. You can opt for a thicker battery pack, which gives you more life.
That's true.
Of course, you know, that's also going to give you back some of the weight that you gave up
right.
when you bought one of the newer PSP models.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand too, the systems became a little speedier.
Yeah.
The PSP 2000 and then 3000, they improved the processor speed, although it sort of depended on what game you were playing as to how fast it would access. And the UMD is also known to be sort of a pokey format.
Yeah, it does take a little longer to load up a game than it would on, a cartridge-based or system. Actually, that's been a problem for a lot of gaming systems, not just portable ones.
Mm-hmm.
Any gaming system that uses discs rather than cartridges tends to have more loading times mm-hmm. that you have to endure. The cartridges tend to be pretty much instantaneous, and the anything that's on a disc, it just takes time for the laser to find the right information to read it, and then there's a little buffering period while the processor gets up to speed. I mean, it's kind of unavoidable right now. The technology is just not fast enough for it to be instant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we as human beings used to living in the digital age, we want our gratification as fast as possible. Gosh darn it.
That's true. I mean, nobody really wants to be sitting around waiting. Anyway,
Well, I was going to say, I'm sorry, one other thing about the processor speed you were mentioning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had heard, this is something I need to verify, actually. This is one of those things that I read once and I'd have to really research to make sure. But I had heard one reason why the later models of the PSP are faster. It's not actually necessarily an improved processor. It's that that Sony specifically limited the speed on the processor. Mm-hmm. It was able to go at least 333 megahertz.
Yes.
But they had lowered that to around 220 megahertz on purpose. And then so essentially they then removed that limitation later on in the life of the PSP, which effectively made it a faster machine, even though it was really just going at the speed it could always go.
So it's sort of, if you'll pardon the sports analogy here, sort of like a restrictor plate on NASCAR racing where they actually, you know, do something to keep the engine from pushing the car forward at a faster rate. They basically put a restrictor on the processor speed of the earlier machines to keep them from hitting their actual clock speed.
I want to say yes.
Okay.
But you're talking foreign talk to me now.
All right. Well, as far as the Universal Media Discs,
yes.
Discs go, we do have an article about how the PSP works mm-hmm. on the website.
That's true.
And
Ed Grabanowski.
Yes, who's a fine, fine writer.
Yes, he is.
From what he wrote in that article, Sony chose that particular format because it would hold 1.8 gigs of information, and you know, it's able to be manufactured very quickly and for a lower cost, which was the advantage of it. Now, obviously, if you look at the PSP Go, the point that you made earlier about how flash memory can be a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they switch. There is no UMD in the PSP Go.
Yes, that's the latest model to come out of Sony, and it's running concurrently
mm-hmm.
with the PSP 3000. So you can still get either the PSP 3000, which still runs on the discs, the UMDs, or you can get the PSP Go, which does not have a slot for UMDs. The only way you get games on that, content on that, is to download it and mm-hmm. to transfer it either by memory stick, by USB cable, or wirelessly. It mm-hmm. actually has all these PSP products, by the way, also have wireless capability so that you can play games with friends without having to hook up cables between the two. You can even use it to make Skype calls
yes,
on
you
your
can.
PSP, which is pretty darn cool.
It is very cool.
Now, the PSP Go, since they got rid of the UMD option, they started to run into a little bit. It's had a rocky launch.
It's
had a rough couple of months. The system itself is very sleek looking. When you first look at it, you think, oh, wow, they must have gone to a touchscreen display because there are no controls that I can see.
Yes. The first ones, if you haven't actually seen a PlayStation Portable, when you look at it, it is sort of sort of like what they call the candy bar phones. They're very long, and the screen is in the center with controls on either side of it. Mm-hmm. But the PSP Go is a departure from that form factor.
Right. So the controls on your regular PSP very much look like the controls on a PlayStation controller.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the basic buttons, the triangle and the X and the square and the circle, and you've got the direction pad and even a little analog joystick in the lower left-hand corner. Now, the PSP Go, when you first look at it, it looks like there are no controls on it whatsoever. But in actuality, there is a slide-out section that you can, you know, you slide out from beneath the screen, and that's where all the controls are. So, you know, it looks really compact and sleek when it's all closed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, ideally, you would be able to just slide it in whenever you were maybe watching media. Like if you were watching a movie or something and you didn't need the controls, you might just, you know, close it up. Otherwise, I can't really I don't really understand the design behind that. I don't know why Sony would have gone with that particular design.
It's fun.
It's fun.
I mean,
but,
you know, people,
you know,
there's a tactile pleasantness about something that slides out.
I suppose so, because I do occasionally mess with my HTC G1, which also has a slide-out keyboard.
Yeah.
And so I can't deny there is a satisfying click when you slide the screen out of the way. It just seems odd because it does make the device thicker than it would have to be.
True.
Because you have that – I'm sorry. You have that extra layer.
Yeah. And another disadvantage – or let me say this. Another complaint that I've read in doing research for the podcast is that – it seems to be made for people with smaller hands because it is a smaller device.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the screen is smaller, and but although it maintains the same resolution.
Right.
So it seems to be more appropriate for people with smaller hands. People with bigger hands have trouble playing with the PSP Go, or at least as far as I've read.
Right. And there's been some other problems. One of the problems was that when it launched, again, they did not have that many games available for the PSP Go. Now, ideally, whenever you would get a system like this, you would be able to make old games available via download as quickly as possible. So you'd have access to the library of games that already exist for the PSP.
Yeah, it's not like you can go to your local used game store and buy games for it because the UMDs are not going to work with the PSP.
Right, this is very clever on Sony's part, by the way, because it means that they are going to get a lot more first sales and then they don't have to worry about people selling their games to other players.
Yeah.
But it also means that the other thing that the promise that Sony PSP Go owners kind of had was that when a new game came out, it was going to come out in the PSP Go format as well as the regular PSP format pretty much at the same time. So ideally, if you were really anticipating a certain game, you would be able to get it on your PSP Go before your buddy could go to the store, pick it up, come back, and start playing. So you could have bragging rights. Oh, you know, I've been playing this for 45 minutes while you went out to go and buy the physical copy.
Mm-hmm.
But in several cases, Sony has released games where the PSP Go version was not ready. And so the physical format came out and the PSP Go version did not come out. And so then you had all the people who had the old PSP saying, I don't know why you wasted your money on that new device because my old one, I can play this game and you still have to wait. So that's been kind of a black eye. Another one is that there was talk for a while of a UMD exchange program where if you had a UMD for a game for your old PSP, and you now have the PSP Go, you could start to turn in your old UMDs to get either credit or some other kind of game in exchange, or even the same game in exchange for the PSP Go.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being that, well, if you hand over the physical media back to Sony, there shouldn't be an issue there. They'd be like, all right, sure, here's your game. But that hasn't happened either, even though Sony originally said they were going to make plans for it. That's still in the, oh, we're making plans phase, and meanwhile the device has been out for a couple of months.
Right. It's from what I understand, there just hasn't been any real, you know, communication from Sony other than the
it's coming.
This is what we're going to do.
Yeah, there've been a lot of there's been some grumbling. Now, granted, things have been getting better as time has gone on. You know, more games have come out for the Go. It's still one of those systems that I think most gamer reviewer types would say, let's wait a little longer before you dive in and buy one of these things because If you can get the same experience on a PSP 3000 and it's cheaper than the PSP Go, and there's no other like clear advantage to owning a PSP Go, why would you go and buy one?
Yeah.
You know, go ahead and stick with the other current model that is still supported. Games are still coming out for it.
Mm-hmm.
The same games that are coming out for the PSP Go. It's not like PSP Go has a ton of exclusive content.
Mm-hmm.
So stick with that and you're going to save money, and you know, you're not going to have these same kind of headaches that a lot of the PSP Go early adopters have experienced.
Right.
I do think that it's going to continue to get better for PSP Go owners. Do not despair if you went out and bought a PSP Go. It's just going to take a while. I don't think Sony had all their ducks in a row when they launched the product, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it's I'm interested too whether or not they're going to continue with the original PSP form factor now that the Go has been launched.
Well, we've heard some rumors.
Mm-hmm.
There are rumors of a new device in the PSP line that would still use the UMDs, and it would be called the PSP 4000, keeping in with the trend. So far, this is just in the rumor phase. At the time that we're recording this podcast, there's a fairly recent rumor that came out that kind of fueled this, that an accessory for a game, Little Big Planet actually was the game for the PSP, had on its packaging a little label saying that there was support for the PSP 4000, which, as we, again, at the time of recording this podcast, does not officially exist.
Mm-hmm.
So some people were wondering if this was perhaps an accidental leak that indicates that, yes, Sony does have a new device planned and has told developers but has not revealed it to the public. Since then, the manufacturer has said, no, this was a mistake. Don't draw any conclusions. So we don't know right now for sure if this was just simply a typo where someone was typing in, okay, well, we support the PSP 1000, 2000, 3000. Is there 4000? I don't know. Better put it in. Okay. Or if it was 1000, 2000, 3000, 4000. Oh, crap. They haven't announced the 4000 yet. We're not really sure. I wouldn't draw too many conclusions about this. I think if there is a 4000 coming out, I don't know when Sony would announce it. I mean, normally you use things like E3, that's when they announced the PSP Go.
Yes.
You would use an event like that to announce a new product, but that's not until next June. So
yes, and you wouldn't want to sabotage your holiday sales.
No.
You know, by doing that.
But again, they're selling the PSP 3000 concurrently with the PSP Go, so they're already kind of sabotaging their own sales.
Well, the other thing to consider too is that the while the original PSP came out in 2005, the successive versions of that have been coming out about every year
for the last
couple of years.
So it wouldn't be a surprise to see the 4000 at E3 this year.
No. And they've been making essentially incremental improvements on the original design.
Better battery life, better video performance.
So
Although I've heard that some of the things they did for the screen recently just made it a little more jagged.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a PSP 3000, so I can't really make that statement from firsthand experience. That was just from a review I read.
I covet them when I see them. They're nice machines.
I do. Yeah, I haven't worked up the nerve to actually mug someone for one, but you know. But yeah, it's on the list. And something else we should point out just very quickly before we wrap up. We're running out of time here, but interestingly, one of the reasons why the PSP Go came out actually, Sony has a new competitor, not just Nintendo. There's a new competitor on the scene, and that would be Apple.
Yes.
The iPhone and iPod Touch have become legitimate gaming platforms. And these little games that are coming out for both the iPhone and the iPod Touch that are going for, you know, maybe just a few dollars a pop are posing a legitimate threat to other handheld gaming devices, which, you know, traditionally their games are in the $20 to $30 range.
Yes, and with the additional application source, with the Apple App Store model, other providers are starting to get on board with that too. And I have the feeling that smartphones in general from all kinds of providers are going to be competition for the dedicated gaming devices. Nintendo probably being the one in the most jeopardy because it is more geared specifically toward gaming. The PSP is more flexible, which gives you an opportunity to enjoy that. But the thing is, you're right, because a lot of the games that I've seen running $30 and $40 for the dedicated gaming platforms are $10 and less in the Apple App Store.
Right. So that might be a reason for the PSP Go as well, as a way for Sony to kind of develop a gaming system that will have its own exclusive games that you won't find on the PSP 3000 or on UMD format. But they're just going to go for a lower price and be more competitive with the iPhone and iPod Touch games.
And then, of course, there's the, as we talked about with the Zune, Microsoft not giving phone features to the Zune. It's possible. I mean, Sony has the partnership with Ericsson, but I don't know that you'll see the two converge much.
Well, I think the problem with that is you would, especially when you look at the form factor, you know what happens when you put an actual phone in the PSP?
Yeah.
You get the N-Gage. And that thing was awful.
Well, you know, Nokia also has its own app store working up. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
All right. Well, so that's kind of our take on the PSP. It's a nifty gaming system. I mean, it packs a big wallop in a small package. And I've been really impressed by the games that I've played on it. I think it's a really decent system. I would not hesitate to go out and buy one myself if I didn't have a wife who would slap me upside the head if I went and bought another gaming system.
Well, you know, it is not, now that they have the PS3 Slim, it's not that much less
I've been
than
trying
a PlayStation
to
3.
I've been trying to convince her that the PlayStation 3 is actually a Blu-ray player and that's why we should get one. So far, she ain't buying, because unfortunately for me, I married a very smart woman. All right, well, that wraps that up. So why don't we finish this podcast with a little more listener mail. This listener mail comes from Brian, and Brian says, "Hey guys, I've been a longtime listener, and I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the Electronics Theory podcast. I really got a lot out of it. Keep them coming. I hope your head healed quickly, Jonathan." Well, thanks, Brian. Yes, my head did heal quickly. The scar is almost completely gone. I appreciate the concern. Yeah, I shave my head and occasionally I take a chunk out of it. You know, it's just a self-loathing thing. I'm working through it. I'm seeing someone about it. Anyway, I think
he was actually talking about how you said your head was going to explode at the end of that podcast.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Did I? Oh, well, that unfortunately I'm still recovering from. some wounds never heal, Brian. Some wounds never heal. So, with that, let's wrap up another episode of Tech Stuff. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. We do have a great article, as Chris said, on the site written by Ed Grabanowski about how the PSP works. I recommend you go and check that out. We have lots of other articles about other video game systems. So head on over to HowStuffWorks.com. Take a look at those. Remember, Chris and I do a live show every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find out about that at the Tech Stuff blog. Just go to the website and you'll see the blog links on the right-hand side. Or you can go to blogs.howstuffworks.com if you want to take the direct route. And remember, if you want to send us any email for suggestions, questions, anything like that, our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey. Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of the values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number four best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. Exploreminnesota.com/live.